Hello. Your download of this podcast is much appreciated. If at any case you feel frightened, angry, or like a spineless bitch, please feel free to mute or delete the show. Other than that, enjoy the saga of Steve Rogers.
To the Rodriguez Report. My name is Hasbro Rodriguez. Ever mention how much I hate CNN? I hate CNN. CNN used to be the go-to place for news that you could believe and trust. They earned that reputation with world-class reporting and journalists who you could put more faith in than your parents. Now the joke that CNN has become is heartbreaking, quite frankly embarrassing. I wouldn't trust CNN if they told me rain was wet. I hate CNN because of what CNN has let itself become. Now here's the irony of all ironies. That piece of shit network broadcasts one of the greatest and most enjoyable shows in my life right now. That would be Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown. Anthony Bourdain is dead. He killed himself. I woke up and read the headlines and sat there slack-jawed. I read them again and nothing changed. He was still dead. I fight depression every day. I can tell you this. He went from, I can't wait to see my girlfriend today, to screw it. I don't want to do this anymore. In about 10 seconds. I don't like talking about this, which is probably my biggest personal problem. So I'm not going to go any further on the life-draining horror show that is depression. I'll miss his show and its unbelievably fantastic adventures. God, I'm so envious on how he lived his life. I'll miss him as a person, and unlike the close people in his life that loved him and are right now screaming, how could you be so selfish? I'll understand why. I'll never agree with what he did, but I'll always know why. That's your Rodriguez Report for the week. I got nothing else to say.
Greetings and salutations, and welcome to the saga of Steve Rogers. My name's Tom, and I'm glad to have you here. If you're here for the first time, welcome. If you've been here before, welcome back. Thanks for coming. Tell a friend, subscribe, review, share the show on your social media. Love to continue to grow the show. I'm very happy with where things are, but I'd love more people to hear the show. So if you like the show, share it with somebody you hate the show. Share it with somebody you hate. I don't care. Let them listen to. This episode kind of got moved up. The Rodriguez Report you just heard was more timely than some of the others. They don't really have a time frame. They don't need to be at any specific place, but received that Rodriguez Report about an hour ago during dinner with the amazing Amy. We actually were talking about the same subject earlier in the week, so thought I'd move it up, do a little solo podcast. Person I had scheduled for this week backed out, but I got a replacement. I'm recording tomorrow still, but I'm going to talk about something that's not going to be funny, not going to be, you know, the usual Steve Rogers happy horseshit, if you consider it happy or horseshit. Anthony Bourdain killed himself this week, and Kate Spade just before that. The Rodriguez Report that you just heard was about depression, and my friend Asbel struggles with depression, and so do I, quite honestly. I'm not trying to make this morose and depressing and blah, 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 but it may be a little bit of that, but I'll try to sprinkle in a little funny. I've done podcasts solo in the past. I really enjoy interviewing people. One of the things I love about doing this show is meeting new people, meeting new sides of people I already know, and finding out new shit about people. I created business cards a couple months ago, maybe 6 months ago, and I put on the card, like, everybody's got a story and I want to hear your story. So to me, that's what this show's about. When somebody meets me and I tell them I have a podcast, like, what's your show about? What's the goal? And I'm not trying to raise social awareness. I'm not trying to be a, you know, social justice warrior. I'm not trying to be a comedian. I'm just trying to talk to people, cool people that I like and interesting people that I like, and talk about shit that's important to me, whether it's a comic book or a toy or how Monroe, Louisiana is the butthole of the universe. Sorry, Matt. Love you. But today's going to be a little different. This is an important subject to me and timely. So don't know much about Kate Spade's suicide. Don't know much about Kate Spade. When I heard Kate Spade, I was like, oh, I know she's related to David Spade, the comedian. And I know that she makes purses, and most women own some Kate Spade shit. The night it happened, I watch TMZ every night. We watch it kind of as a family and make fun of celebrities because, you know, that's what TMZ does, is it really makes you realize the people that are that have been deified by the humans of the world are really just ridiculous, and it's fun to make fun of them and the Kardashians and the Kanyes of the world. But they were talking about Kate Spade, and they didn't make light of the fact that she committed suicide, but they were like, you know, how many women in this room have a Kate Spade thing? Like, how many people have Kate Spade shit? And every single woman raised her hand. One of the girls on the show was like, I've got her phone, I've got a keychain, I've got a purse, I've got 7 purses, I've got this, I've got that. Like, Kate Spade was all her shit. She's like, Kate Spade is my jam. Like, I wear a lot of Nautica dress shirts, and if somebody was to ask me what my brand is, like my go-to brand for dress shirts, it's Nautica. I love Nautica. I don't know if it's the little boat or if it's just that was the first dress shirt that I bought that had a little logo on it and people could see that I didn't buy it at Kmart. And being, you know, simple-minded and enjoying the adulation of other people or the whatever. Adulation is the wrong word. But anyway, wearing Nautica shit is kind of what I do for my dress shirts. Kate Spade was her shit. And she was like, you know, I don't know much about her, but blah, blah, blah. I've got a lot of her stuff. If someone was looking at Kate Spade's life the day before, the week before, the month before that she killed herself, we on the outside would look at it and go, God, she's got everything. She's probably super wealthy. She's got a family. All right, her husband's leaving her, but she's super wealthy. She'll be fine. Like, she'll bounce back. Money's money. Money fixes everything. Cyndi Lauper told us money changes everything. Money makes everything better. It actually doesn't. And this woman, from what I understand, one of the reasons that was left behind, and again, if you're hearing this and I'm wrong, I know fucking nothing, so don't be mad at me for being wrong about the reasons that were left behind. But my understanding is that one of the big reasons is she was going through a divorce, and she left a note for her daughter saying, it's not because of you, it's because of him, and whatever. It's not because of anybody. The demons inside all of us are fucking real. Anthony Bourdain, I lived in New York for a while. I tell this story to a lot of people, so if you know me in the real world, from the place where I work, and I almost said the name and nobody's here to correct me, but the place where I work sent me to New York for about a year, and I was working on a government project to help clean up some of the shit in the industry I work in, and a bunch of my friends went to Anthony Bourdain's restaurant when we were in Manhattan. We lived in Manhattan for a year, and I don't like French food, and I looked at the menu, and I was like, you know, I'm good. I don't need to eat snail assholes and, you know, hold my pinky up when I'm drinking a drink or whatever. I'm good. I'm not interested. But the guy is interesting to me. Like, I've watched his show, the different iterations of his show. Anthony Bourdain is a fascinating guy. Like, he's a chef at his core. What he is he makes food for other people, and he does it with amazing flair. And, you know, he was one of the cook rock stars that came out of the 90s and the early 2000s when the Food Network jumped off the pages and became one of the biggest places ever. You know, there was Emeril Lagasse with BAM, and everybody was like, BAM, and just, you know, screaming along with him. And Anthony Bourdain is the character. Like, he was the guy. I texted my friend earlier. We were talking about Anthony Bourdain, and I was like, you know, Bourdain's the guy, like, his persona was the guy that would be like, flip life over and fuck it raw. just because he could. Like, there was nothing he wouldn't do. He'd go to the most, you know, the filthiest, dirtiest shithole of a country and eat food off of a hubcap that they just pulled off the taxi they drove to get there and enjoy the shit out of it. Like, he just... It seemed like there was no no's in that man. Like, there was nothing that he wouldn't do and nothing that he didn't enjoy the shit out of. He either enjoyed the shit out of it or he hated it so much that he enjoyed hating the shit out of it. Like, he seemed like a guy that there was nothing. There's no no's in his life. Like, he would go to a place where you or I would go before, you know, somebody tells you, hey, we need you to go to insert name of country that we all think is horrible. And you would look it up on, you know, the internet and go, oh man, you can't eat this and you can't do that. And there's this disease and I need this inoculation. He'd be like, all right, I'll catch a flight tomorrow morning and I'll be there. Like, that seemed like the kind of guy he was. Like, he had life, you know, by the horns. And like I said, flipped it over and gave it to it whenever he wanted to. And apparently that's just not the case. He hung himself and left himself in a place where his best friend, another chef, Eric Vauper, is the one that found his body. And one of the other things I texted to my friend was, God, that's such a selfish act, man. Like, suicide, again, if you're offended, I apologize. I'll talk about my own demons and my own thoughts about suicide in a little while. Hopefully I'll remember. But it's to leave yourself where the person who finds you is never going to lose that image. However he hung himself, his best friend, Eric Vauper, who's one of the funniest guys in the world. Like, if you were putting two people together, you would never go, these two guys would be great friends, because Eric Vauper is refined and, you know, he's highfalutin, and Bourdain would wear flip-flops, a pair of shorts, and like I said, fuck life, raw dog. You would never put those two together and go, these guys are going to be amazing together. But they were. Like, to see them on some of the shows together and hear, read interviews and just see them joking and laughing together was a beautiful thing. And for your best friend to be the one that has to find you hanging dead, like, I literally, the first thing I thought of when I got up, I wake up at 4:40 in the morning and I flipped on my phone and went to my newsfeed and I saw that he killed himself. First, I saw that he was dead. There was no immediate notification of his suicide, and I had to scroll through and read a couple other links, and I found out he killed himself. And then I found out his best friend found him. And my first reaction to Eric Vauper finding him was, God, that's selfish. Super selfish. Like, I understand demons and I understand hardship and feelings and depression. I've been there. I have been clinically depressed. I've taken medication to help with depression. You know, my best friend who does the Rodriguez Report talks about depression and he battles it every day. Life has given him a shit sandwich and he partook of the sandwich because it was the only thing he could do was partake of it and continue to struggle through. My depression was clinical. I'm sorry. My depression was situational. It was about things that were happening in my life at a certain time, and I saw no way out. It doesn't matter when, where. I've had depressing thoughts other times in my life before this. Back when I was with number one, I blew out my ankle, for lack of a better term. I tore the peroneal tendon. If anybody listening is in medicine, you'll know what the peroneal tendon is. Those of you that don't, it kind of runs down the Achilles and up the side of the foot. It's the tendon that helps lift your foot up and down when you're doing that thing with your foot at the ankle. I tore the peroneal tendon at work. Fuck that place. I'll say the name of it. I was working at Pizza Hut at the time. We were stripping and sealing the floors, and I went to go into the walk-in cooler to get a piece of dough to make a pizza, and foot went one way, I went the other way, and I literally heard a tearing sound, and I knew it was bad, and I had to go to the hospital, had to have one of my drivers drive me there, and it was bad. I was out of work for a year, on workman's comp, sitting at home, just feeling horrible about myself. And I sat there one night. I haven't always been a gun owner, but at the time I was a gun owner. I owned a couple guns, and I still do. I'm not a gun nut and won't go down the NRA route because that's not what this is about. But I sat there one night, didn't have the gun in my hand. It wasn't like a Nicolas Cage movie or something, or some kind of super depressing, really bad drama movie. But I sat there one night. My first wife was in bed, and I was sitting in a recliner in front of the TV, and I thought, I don't want to live like this anymore. I was having to use a handicap placard to go anywhere. I had a boot on. I at different times I had a walking cast, or I was not able to walk and have my leg be weight-bearing at all, so I was hopping around on one foot and not leaving the house. Like, my depression was real. And it was horrifying to me. Not that I'm some kind of, you know, climb a mountain, you know, physical specimen, because fuck that, I'm not and I've never been. But I felt my life changing for the worse. And I sat there that night and I was like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to feel the pain when I do touch my foot to the ground. That was excruciating, would shoot up my leg. I don't remember at what point in my rehabilitation this thought happened, if it was after the surgery that didn't work and the tendon popped loose again or not, and having to go through the fights with the insurance company and, you know, he could go back to work and he should be back at work tomorrow, and knowing that I couldn't stand on my ankle for any length of time. Again, I was a manager at Pizza Hut, so it was 8, 10, 12-hour shifts sometimes on your feet the entire time. There was no sitting down. There was no, hey, guys, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to go sit down. You know, somebody else do it. There was none of that. I didn't have that ability. And I sat there saying, man, I'm never going to be able to earn again. And it wasn't about money, because I'm not money motivated. But at the end of the day, you know, money makes the world go round, as I said earlier, in the negative way. Bills got to be paid, and shit was going south financially. Shit was going south emotionally in my relationship. And I just sat there and said, you know what? Things would be so much better if I wasn't here. And I wasn't thinking like, oh, I'll kill myself and she'll get all this insurance money and everything will be fine. And, you know, number one will be great. I didn't give a shit about making her great. I was thinking, I'm not going to continue to add to the negativity of her life, our financial lives together, our relationship. You know, I was obviously a depressed, not a happy person because of what was going on. And the thing that stopped me was thinking, I mean, I literally thought, I'm going to go get my gun, and I'm going to sit here, and I'm going to put something I love on TV, and I'm going to put that gun in my mouth, and I'm going to pull that trigger. And I wasn't thinking about my family, my friends, my life. All I was thinking was, I'll be relieved, and I won't be feeling like I don't even know. I don't know what word I'm looking for. I won't be feeling like life is just fucking me over. I won't feel like life has done this to me. I'll be done. Life can't fuck me any harder. The thing that stopped me was the thought of my first wife, who, she's an evil human being. And at the time, I didn't think she was evil. I thought she had evil family, and her mother's a horrible person. But I didn't want her to hear that shot come running out and see the wall covered in blood. That was the image that I saw in my head. That's what stopped me, was thinking. I literally looked up above my head and behind me, and the wall was white. And eggshell, ecru, whatever, eat me. But the white wall, and I pictured the white wall as I've seen it in movies, with a blood splash going up the wall. And thought to myself, how fucked up is it going to be for her if that sound happens and she comes walking out that door and there's the remnants of what was inside my head all over the wall? And I was like, I could never do that to her. Now, I'm not trying to disparage Anthony Bourdain and say, God, I'm better than him. How dare he do that? That was my initial thought. I was like, wow, that's amazingly selfish. And the thought that would have been the most selfish thing I could do to my first wife is the same thing I felt when I heard about Anthony Bourdain and Eric Rohpert. I was like, thank God. If you don't believe in God, that's on you. Whoever you believe in, thank whatever deity you believe in. Maybe you pray to Batman. That would be awesome. But thank whatever higher power you believe in that I thank whatever higher power I believe in, Jesus Christ, that I didn't do that and I didn't make that person come out and see that wall, see me laying there dead or maybe even not dead, maybe worse than dead, a bullet through my head and just not completely dead yet. I couldn't do it because of that, because of what my actions would have done to another person. And again, I'm not saying that, wow, I'm better than Anthony Bourdain and what he did. I don't know what his life is. I don't know what his depressions were. I don't know what his demons were. I've seen his show, and we all see people, and we think we know celebrities. And, you know, Anthony Bourdain's a millionaire, a billionaire. Who knows? I don't know what his net worth is and his life. And I know he had a fiance, and he had multiple restaurants and TV shows and whatever, and his traveling all over the world. And, of course, his life must be filled with glee and joy. And that's just not the case. Like, the grass is not always greener. The situational depression that I talked about a little earlier, I was with my second wife and having problems in that relationship. It was a bad relationship from the beginning. Never should have done it. She shouldn't have done it. We both should have been smart enough to know that it wasn't the great relationship. I bounced from number one to number two with no growth time, and there was no growth period between number one and number two, and I was still a horribly selfish person and just didn't know anything about anything, didn't know shit about shit, I guess is a better way to put it. Didn't know shit about shit and never should have made that choice, and neither should she, and we both own a piece of that. But I was going through depression again. This time I didn't think about killing myself. I was like, you know what? Fuck all of this. I called the company I work for. I work for a major corporation. We have amazing benefits. And I called the employee assistance program. Most major companies have it. If you work for a company, you probably have some version of it. If you don't, doesn't matter. You should speak to somebody if you're feeling shitty. And I was sitting at work one day and I was like, I'm at an all-time low. And if I don't talk to somebody, it's just going to get worse. Sorry. I sat at my desk and I was like, again, wasn't thinking like, I'll shoot myself here. My boss will find me. All I can think about is I've never been this sad. I've never been this tired. I wasn't sleeping. I would sleep for an hour or 2 hours at a time and wake up, and my mind was racing. I had millions of issues at work and priority jumping and situations, and I would wake up like, oh, I've got to do this, and I'd write notes, write little post-its. I'd wake up, and there'd be five post-its on my nightstand that I didn't remember writing, but I knew I wasn't sleeping, obviously, if I wrote fucking five notes to myself in the middle of the night. So I called the employee assistance program at the major corporation where I worked. Employee assistance program is there for you. It's not about, you know, I'm not nuts. I don't need to talk to a therapist. If that's what you think, first off, you're wrong. Everybody needs to talk to a therapist. I've said this before when I've talked to people and we've gotten to the part of, hey, have you ever been to therapy? Have you thought about going to therapy? And they're like, yeah, well, or some people have said, yeah, I've gone. I think everybody should be in therapy. Does everybody need to be in therapy all the time? No. Does everybody need to be in deep psychoanalysis for years at a time? No, you're not Howard Stern. That's one fucked up dude. He still goes to therapy 4 days a week and probably should be. I don't know how I pulled Howard Stern reference right out of my asshole, but I did. The bottom line is employee assistance program is a benefit to help you when you're going through a struggle. When you're going through your worst, it doesn't need to be your worst. It could be your worst this month. And you're like, you know what? I don't want it to get worse. I don't want to see this worse go into next month. So I called the EAP program, and they have a counselor, and it's probably a call center and the same shit that I do. You know, where I work, people call in about their mortgage. I'm calling a call center where people call in about their batshit craziness. And she's like, hey, thanks for calling the EAP. My name's Nancy. How can I help you? And I was like, I need to talk to somebody. And she's like, well, you're talking to somebody now. LOL. No, she didn't say that. But, you know, just a brief version. Tell me what's going on. And I gave her a brief version and told her where I lived. She already knew where I was because she had the information in front of her. And she's like, I could give you the number of a handful of therapists and you could call somebody and see when you could get in. First place I called, left a message, called the next one, left a message. A lot of therapists, they're in session. So they don't – why did my voice just do that? Oh, my God, they're in session. They're in a session, and then they may check their phone a couple times during the day, but nobody answered right away. I left messages on a handful of them that were closer in proximity than the others. I also didn't want to talk to a female. Don't know why, just didn't. It's weird because some of my best friends in life are women, but for whatever reason, I said I want to talk to a dude, and guy called me back within a half hour. I could tell he was out because he was on his cell phone, and I could hear the wind whipping around him. And he's like, yo, so tell me what's going on, blah, blah, blah. He's like, so I don't have my calendar in front of me, but, you know, when do you want to come in? I was like, how about right now? And I could hear him go, ooh, it's that kind of situation. I was like, yeah, it probably is. He's like, well, I'm off today, but I'll meet you at the office in 45 minutes if you could be there. I was like, fuck yeah, I'm there. And I went to my boss and said, hey, I'm leaving. I'm taking a sick day, the rest of the day. Part of the situation was my boss, so I might have said under my breath, eat my ass, and got in my car and left. And I went to this therapist's office, and I sat down. And I had already done a lot of the deep thinking myself. Again, going back to the Rodriguez report, when I've talked to Asbel about some of my things in my life, I talked about going to therapy. He's like, the funny thing is, the therapist knows within 5 minutes of you walking in and you starting to talk how fucked up you are and how to fix you. But they can't tell you that, because if somebody in life goes, hey, what you need to do is this, you're like, hey, fuck you, you don't know my life. Even if you're going to a therapist and you're asking them for help, they may bust out with, okay, so what you need to do is this and this and this. They need to take you down a path. It's about you figuring your own shit out and them guiding you, gently nudging you. They're not going to grab your head and hold it underwater like, you know, a waterboarding incident. That's not underwater, but you get my point. They're not going to waterboard you with information and expect you to not gasp for breath. They're gonna lead you to it. They're going to, you know, gently nudge you towards the water and let you put your own face under the water. Weird analogy, and I'm talking about suicide too. But I went in there and I was completely self-aware of what needed to be done. And, you know, I talked for a little while and he's like, you know, it seems like you've kind of got this figured out. So what do you need from me? I was like, I need meds. I need something to stop my brain from cycling at this manic phase when I'm laying in bed. I need to be able to sleep. I'm not sleeping and that's not helping. The person I was seeing, the EAP person, wasn't able to prescribe meds, but he's like, I'll call your doctor right now, and I'll tell him what to do, and I'll have him call in a prescription, and we'll work together to do this, because there are different levels of therapists and psychiatrists and psychologists. I'm not sure which one can write prescriptions or which one just sits there and says, tell me about your mother. But either way, the one I had was a tell-me-about-your-mother guy, not even a psychologist or a psychiatrist. He was a therapist, which I'm sure there's some level of training needed, but I think we're all therapists in some way, shape, or form. He worked with my doctor. I got sleep medication, and I was put on Lexapro. I was put on a different medication, and I didn't feel any appreciable uptick in my happiness level. And it's not going to be like I take a pill and the headache goes away in 45 minutes. It's not that kind of pill. But I didn't feel the uptick as quick as I thought it would, as he thought it would. So he changed me to from whatever it was in the beginning to Lexapro. And Lexapro is the one that worked for me. Don't remember the milligrams. Don't remember what it was. But it wasn't about – it was about chemicals in my brain not working correctly, my brain not firing correctly, but it wasn't at the same time. There were situations in my life that I needed to change, but I needed my brain to be ready to accept this new input. Because one side of my brain knew I needed to fix shit. The other side of my brain was like, nah, fuck it, let's stay where we are. So I needed the two sides to begin working together again. So sleep medication, if you've never taken Ambien, Ambien is jacked up for a lot of people. A lot of people take it, another timely reference. Roseanne took Ambien and tweeted, you know, racist shit. And Ambien, the person who does Ambien's company's social media deserves a fucking whatever the online social media award version is of an Academy Award when he said, we've done studies and one of the side effects of Ambien is not racism. That was fucking classic. I don't know how that got approved by the board, but I'm telling you, that's one of the best tweets ever. Regardless, Ambien causes a lot of people to do a lot of different shit. What it caused me to do was go to sleep in about 35 seconds. I would take a pill. I would lay down in bed. I'd feel my ass hit the bed. And I don't think I always even felt my head hit the pillow. I would boom, out, and I would wake up 8 hours later. I had to make sure I had 8 hours because the first couple days I didn't plan a full 8 hours because I was sleeping 2 hours anyway. So I didn't plan a full 8 hours and I was a fucking zombie the next day. So I figured out, bottle says you need 8 hours. I'm going to take 8 hours. And I woke up without my alarm going off at the 8 hour mark. I would wake up before my alarm and I would wake up refreshed, no post-its. I literally didn't move. There was no like, oh, I'll get up two times during the night and take a piss, or I'll get up and, oh, let me go make a, you know, I'll go have an Oreo cookie in a glass. There was nothing. I didn't move for 8 hours, and my body needed that, and it recharged its battery. I did this for a little while, made changes at work and at home, and fixed the situations that were causing my situational depression and anxiety, and I decided I was going to stop taking the Lexapro. You can't just stop taking antidepressants just like you stop taking Tylenol or any other medication just because, yeah, I think I fixed that situation. Your body will fuck you up. So I weaned myself off. I didn't ask anybody's opinion on it. I didn't ask my therapist. The EAP had run its course, and you know, I was going through some tighter financial situations because my second wife was a horrible money manager, and I, being the weaker person in the house, allowed her to manage our finances completely. I had no idea where the money was going. Didn't care. Like, paycheck here, give me my allowance like I'm 12, and I was fine. So there was no ability to continue to go to see the therapist once the EAP was run out. But the guy was like, hey, you got my number. Call me if you need me. You know, I can't let you come in and do full sessions, but call me if you want to talk, or, you know, if you got questions. So I called him and said, hey, I'm weaning myself off. Just want to let you know I understand the side effects. I understand I can't just stop taking them. And I weaned myself off quickly, probably quicker than probably is recommended. And I did air quotes with recommended. But the bottom line is I stopped. I moved away from it, and I got better. I've been in therapy since then, made changes in that life and that relationship that made it easy for me to stop stressing so much, able to go back to sleep without taking Ambien to go to sleep. I taught myself, taught myself meditation. I didn't go to a class where I was like, om and chanting and, you know, sitting in a weird position. I taught myself how to put myself to sleep. It's long and it's weird, and if you want to know about it, you can ask me if you know me in real life, or you can send me an email and I'll type up a brief synopsis and send it out to you. But I put myself to sleep in stages. One of the things that my brain does when left to its own devices is I sing songs in my head. Currently, I'm probably stuck in a Maroon 5 Adam Levine man crush phase. So I'll be laying in bed and I'll just be singing, I'm at a payphone trying to call home, blah, blah, blah. And I won't stop singing the song, or I'll switch. I'll be like, stop it, stop it, stop it. And then I'll start singing the new Mike Shinoda song or an older Linkin Park song or whatever music's stuck in my head from whatever's going on in the day. And I have to stop myself from singing and not think about anything in layers. Like, well, anyway. And I taught myself to go to sleep without medication, without anything other than shut your shit down. Wasn't difficult, honestly. It wasn't. I didn't have to go to a class and go to a yogi and, you know, chant and symbols and whatever. I just figured it out. And part of that figuring it out was me figuring out a lot of other stuff in life that all kind of lined up. It was like the perfect cosmic alignment of this relationship sucks, my job sucks, things were going, you know, south at work and south at home and whatever, and the cosmic alignment of everything. Relationship ended, the job ended, I moved on in my life, and you know, that was not the end of depression for me. I've been in therapy since then. Different things in my life that rear their heads during most of my relationships I've been in. But the bottom line is, whatever you're feeling, and you're feeling you're the only person, I'm talking to you individually. If you're like, who the fuck is he talking to? I'm talking to you, everyone who's listening to me. If you feel like that you can't go on, you feel like nobody else is going through the same thing you're going through, if you feel like I don't know how to stop being angry or stressed or how to feel good, why does nobody hate me? Why does nobody love me? Why do I feel like my family hates me? Why do I feel like life hates me? Whatever it is, do not think that suicide is the way out. Please. I don't know shit about shit. I don't know anything. But please, call someone. Talk to someone. Talk to your best friend. Be honest with somebody you love and somebody that loves you. Tell them, I'm having these thoughts, man. I'm feeling like I'm going to put this gun in my mouth. One of the things I had to do was sell the guns that I had in my house. It wasn't something I wanted, and it wasn't like I felt if I didn't do it, I was going to think this every night. But I didn't need proximity to those guns because I went straight to, I'm going to put this gun in my mouth, and I'm going to blow my brains out. That was part of me removing the things that were making this easier for me. Whatever those things are for you, if you're the person who goes to work happy and you leave your house and everything's joyous and you get to work and you can't stop being mad about whatever it is, a customer said something, the person sitting next to you said something, that person's wearing a shirt that you can't afford, that person's driving a car you can't afford, or somebody cut you off on the way into work, or you went to Chick-fil-A and they're like, oh, we're all out of this or that, or the chicken biscuits, or whatever the fucking thing is that sets you off, man. EAP. Holler at your friends. Find a way. Read a book. Find something. Find that thing that makes you happy. I'm sitting here doing this podcast, and I'm looking at a Kevin Smith pop figure sitting on my desk. I've been talking to Kevin Smith this entire time. I don't even know how long I've been talking. Almost 40 minutes. Kevin Smith makes me happy. I'm talking to Kevin Smith. I'm not talking to you guys. The bottom line is, find your Kevin Smith. Find your podcast. This podcast came out of the blog. The blog came out of shit that was going on in my life. I was going through a lot of stuff. I was meeting a lot of people, situations I didn't understand, didn't know. Wanted to write about them. Wanted to be funny, but also wanted to get the shit out. I didn't want that toxin to sit inside of me. And Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla talk a lot of times. People are like, oh, show me where the toxins are. The toxins were in my soul. And writing that blog and talking about the horse shit that I was seeing and the horrible things people were saying and doing and the toxicity of life got it out of my system. And I didn't have it there anymore. And the blog became the podcast. This is my therapy now. I don't go to a therapist. You guys listening are my therapist. The person sitting in that leather chair across from me is my therapist. Whatever your version of this podcast is, find it. Find your happy place, people. Holy fucking shit. Find your happy place, man. I love what I'm doing. I love life. I'm... I've a father. I was never a father. My father my entire life said he was never supposed to be a father. And he had family meetings with us as kids talking about, you know, this was never supposed to be my job. And I was never supposed to be a father in life. I was always supposed to be a father in life. And it was never going to happen until it did. And do I love my kids all the time? I don't like them all the time, but I love them every day. And you fuck with my kids, you will bleed. I will fight for these kids. The bottom line is, I'm supposed to be a father. That helps me. I'm supposed to be talking into this microphone now. That helps me. I'm supposed to help coach people at work. That helps me. I used to be a trainer. That helped me. I do things and found things in life to make me happier. If you're not happy in what you're doing and you think, man, all I can do is rage against the machine, I want to let everybody else be unhappy, stop. At the place where I work, there's an employee assistance program. If you don't work at a place that has one, fuck, talk to somebody. Reach out to a friend. Find somebody who loves you. Find somebody that hates you. There's a group. There's got to be somebody you can talk to. If you don't have an EAP program, you probably have health insurance. If you don't have health insurance, you probably have Obamacare. I don't know what Obamacare covers, and I'm not going down that rabbit hole. I don't care. Find some way to get help. Do not make the choice that these people made this week. Fight the good fight, people. I love this job that I have. I love this life that I have. I love this show that I have. I love every one of you people that are listening. I mean, I like all of you because I know there's people that listen to the show that do it just so they can be I'm gonna do this and that. He's such huge as he think. I love you anyway, man. I love all of you guys. Find something that makes you happy and do it. That's all I got. Thanks for listening. Susu Studio, live long and prosper. Make better choices, get better results. Kevin Smith, thanks for giving me this show.
Figured out.